Attention Austin musicians and music industry professionals. Are you having a difficult time navigating these tricky waters? Well, the Austin Music Foundation is here to help you. The Austin Music Foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to strengthening and connecting the local music community with innovative programs that empower musicians, music industry professionals, and music businesses within Austin's creative economy. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to help the Austin music industry succeed. Now look, ever since COVID took over last year, everything's moved online. The consultations are online. They're at no cost to the artist or to the music industry professional. Just go to austinmusicfoundation.org. That's austinmusicfoundation.org to find out how they can help you. Austin Music Foundation is here to help. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, I'm Johnny.
When we talk.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good weekend this weekend. Oh man, there was a lot of stuff going on in Austin. I was out of town this weekend, but I saw that Mike Campbell and his band were in town. I thought they were only in town on Saturday. I didn't realize they were in town Saturday and Sunday. I would have gone on Sunday. Damn it. I played some shows this weekend in Houston. I played Thursday and Saturday night in Houston with Skyrocket. Was a birthday party show on Friday with a bunch of fans of ours. It was one of our big fans' birthdays, and it was a lot of fun. It was like in this weird rec center in a really fancy part of town. People seemed to have a really good time. It was nice to see all the familiar faces and chat with everyone. Then Saturday's show was a wedding. That was super fun. It was in a nice fancy hotel, the St. Regis, there over there by the kind of by the Galleria, across the freeway from the Galleria. But still kind of over by there in Houston. But Friday, I just hung out at my grandma's all day with my grandma and my aunt. And my aunt and uncle from Conroe came down, and we all hung out. My Uncle Chuck made some ribs. And we just had a good old time. It's nice going down there and being able to take Rosie, and Rosie hangs out there with my grandma and her dog and my aunt. I think my aunt's getting a new dog this week. That's pretty exciting. Anyway, fun times with Skyrocket. Good times playing those shows. I went back to wearing earplugs on Saturday because Thursday, like, whatever was going on with that room, we weren't exceedingly loud, but the room had some insane reflective surfaces that I think really might have furthered the damage in my ears. So on Saturday, I decided, hey, I'm going to start wearing earplugs again. But once again, that sucks, man. You know, it's like wearing earplugs and trying to play a rock and roll show and entertain people and get into it at the beginning. When you first start wearing them, it's hard. You get used to it, and eventually you acclimate and you start getting into it. But when you first start wearing them, it's like trying to have sex wearing like six condoms or something. It's totally not fun. And then the other thing that happens that's real weird is that I kind of drift into my head when I'm wearing those earplugs. It's weird. I feel isolated and in my own world. I don't feel part of this seven-person band that I normally feel very connected with. You know, while I'm playing, I feel connected with them. And I guess it's that weird condom thing. I feel like I'm just kind of over there. Like, am I feeling this? Is this still happening? It's my six condom theory of earplugs. That's what it is. I'll be writing my dissertation on it pretty soon, and you can find it in all the upcoming medical journals in the fall of 2022. Anyway, I did start wearing earplugs again, and it did make a difference when I went home that night to my grandma's. I wasn't watching TV on like volume 50 when I got back. I felt a little more together. I wasn't talking as loud, and my ears weren't ringing as bad. But they still kind of ring, and I get a little nervous sometimes because I'm like, you know, now the ringing doesn't really go away completely. And like, I can hear it now, like when I'm wearing headphones and the house is totally quiet. Normally I have some kind of thing going on, so I don't have to hear it. Anyway, that's the story of my ears. That's the story of my weekend. I hope you guys had a great weekend. Gang, I have a fantastic show for you today. Joel Mullins, who was the front man of the band Tammany Hall Machine in the early 2000s, and then he played keys and guitar for the band The Pawns, who have been on the show before. He's got a brand new album that came out last week called Midlife Crisis. It was self-recorded and self-produced. He played pretty much all the instruments except for our mutual friend Steve Sanders, played drums and bass on the record. Fantastic job. You can find him at joelmullins.com. This album, Midlife Crisis, is him like legitimately working out a midlife crisis musically. Sorry, I'm clapping because it's really intense. Like this record, like he battled depression after the loss of a friend, and then COVID made it worse. And then he quit drinking in the summer of 2020. His niece passed away. His dog died. He split from his wife, and he's got kids, and it's been a rough time, but he was working it all out in this music. He was getting into it and pulling it out of himself. And these songs are really heavy, man. It's very intense. It's a great, great record. It's a great record. And there's a whole like reference to H&H Music and Astroworld and all this stuff. I realize he's a Houston guy, as am I a Houston guy, just like I told you guys I was there this weekend. But yeah, it was really great talking to Joel. Joel Mullins, what a great songwriter. This is a heavy, heavy, heavy album. He also released a 7-inch double side A single with the songs Desperation Times and Midlife Crisis on there. Great songs on here. Desperation Times I thought was really, really great, but it's a song about, you know, struggling with depression and trying to get yourself out of these things. There's even a song called There's No Happy Ending. So, you know, there's also a Is It Love or Salmonella song. So you know where Joel was working out some shit on this record, and we had a really great conversation about it. I want to thank him for being such a great guest and being open and also being so nice to Rosie because she was really into him. In fact, she tried to eat his glasses when we were taking the picture at the end of it. I'll post that on our Facebook page. How did I get here? Don't forget to like it. Hey, don't forget to like it. Don't forget to like our Facebook page. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny Gowdy. Okay. I'm at Johnny Gowdy on Instagram and Twitter, and How Did I Get Here on Facebook, okay? Gang, I had a great time talking to Joel, and this record's fucking great. So self-recorded, self-produced, Steve Sanders on drums and bass, Joel Mullins' Midlife Crisis is a fantastic album. Get out there and check it out. Find him at joelmullins.com, and without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the incredibly talented and incredibly cool Joel Mullins. Let's get down.
I don't know where I'll go, I don't know what I'll do. Look at those diamonds glow, hiding a darker truth. Words can't control the time. I'm way before my age, I'll never be satisfied.
Which was a...
Now, I do remember Tammany Hall Machine. Now, did you come last time with the Pawns?
I did, yeah.
Okay, sorry. I've done 1,150-something.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
sometimes
yeah.
I'm like, I mean, yeah. I do remember. I mean, I know those guys, know my bros, and I've known Steve for a real long time. Yeah. I like that dude. That's a 90s bro.
Yeah, he played on
that. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. He played bass and drums?
Yep.
All right, so I didn't want to say anything when we weren't had the mic going, but... Okay, so this album's fucking incredible. Like,
thanks, man.
Like Joe Ray sent me the thing, and I listened to, you know, everything, and, you know, sometimes I have to tell people, like, man, I'm sorry, I don't... That's another thing, is now you can be a shitty fucking person.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And a publicist will totally publicize your shit. Like, sometimes people send me stuff, and I want to write them back, like, are you fucking kidding? Are you just taking people's money? Like, do you never go, like, hey, man, go make another album, man.
Yeah.
Come back in a couple years. Save your money. So she sent me this thing, and I start listening to it. I didn't read the shit. Not the shit of your life, but, like, I didn't read the thing. I just put it on and started listening to it, doing stuff, and I was just really like, wow, this is great. I start a song over, and...
that was terrible.
And I just really connected with it, and there was something about the way that it sounds and feels. I know you had someone else mix it, but you recorded it yourself. And it has that, you know, that, like the 4-track, you were talking about, oh yeah, guys, passing around your 4-track stuff in the 90s. I mean, I am so attracted to that sound. And you can hear the wheels turning in the artist's head, you know, when they're producing themselves. At some point, I'm going to let you talk.
No, this is fine. Yeah.
But yeah, I loved it. And then I went and I could tell, like, by the songs, every once in a while I go see where the song title was. And I'll be like, huh. Joel, all right? And then I started reading the stuff and I was like, holy shit, man. This is amazing that you were able. You're a fucking artist, man. I mean, I'm sorry you had to go through all this shit, but to be able to turn that into art is what we are supposed to fucking be doing. And you did it. Probably, this is probably the most profound work you've ever done.
Absolutely.
How does it feel? Feel a little vulnerable?
Absolutely.
Because all yeah. I think when I listened to it after I read the shit was, God damn, is Joel all right?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you hear that in the music. I'm glad that there's some that the emotion of it is you know being translated. So, but yeah, it's. I mean, initially we weren't planning to home record it. That was just kind of because of COVID what we ended up having to do. So it definitely turned into probably a different sounding record than it would have.
Not only sounding, but I bet feeling. Like, I bet it would have been hard to capture that vibe going to, like, any studio, any great studio. Nothing against those studios. But there's just something about you had to do stuff. You had to figure stuff out while you were doing it.
Yeah, it was a completely new world.
Fuck yeah, yeah dude. I mean, that's so never, exciting. Does it make you feel alive?
Yeah, I mean, it was... Yeah, I mean, we started it probably a few months into the pandemic, and yeah, it was a lot of trial and error. I was starting the songs at my house just with an acoustic guitar and recording to a click track. And I know initially was doing just a really shitty job at that and then sending tracks over to Steve and he was then trying to overdub drums, onto those songs and he was kind of learning the nuances of me being either behind or ahead of the beat here and there and
trying
and
to play to your performance.
Right. Yeah. And most cases it worked out pretty well. I think there's a few cases where then I had to go back and redo my stuff to his drums, because my initial tracks just weren't, in with the click as much as they should have been. But
yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
That's one of the funniest things about I get records from people and every once in a while you get a record by some guy. Like I had this guy, Jim Keller. He was in a Tommy Two Tone. It was like co-wrote 8675309 and shit.
Oh wow.
And he made this record where they, you know, there's no click. The dude sat in a room, turned on, I mean they did it to a computer because you still have to do it like that, but they didn't move anything and the songs breathe, like, you know, go listen to some of those Stones records, you know. Honky Tonk Women does not end up at the same tempo that it started. And that song would fucking suck if it did.
But they were also probably tracking the drums, like, on the initial tracks, right?
Yeah, I mean, you never know. It could have been just Keith and fucking Charlie on a thing.
Yeah. Well, but Charlie was playing. Like, I think with us, the I had to use the click because the drummer wasn't there. He couldn't even see me playing.
Can I quickly ask you, like, what kind of click did you use? Click, 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 or did you make a little groove to play to?
Oh, no, it was click, click, click.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it sucked. Yeah. Yeah, it was challenging. Yeah. I mean, I was recording on my iPad.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was, yeah, using software I'd, you know, never used before.
The ends justify the means, though. What you ended up with is like a personal masterpiece.
Oh, thank you.
You know, it's great like to a hear, personal, yeah. Like, you know, it's hard to not get emotional because I know what it takes to process that shit and turn it into something you sing.
Yeah,
it's fucked up, man. It's crazy. So. I don't mean to laugh. This is my thing, dude. You have two choices in life. You laugh or you cry. So a lot of times I just laugh. very inappropriately, but still, it's I gotta let out some pressure somehow.
Yeah, right? Both options are therapeutic.
Right.
So, yeah.
Hang on 1 second. Let me make sure this AC thing. A lot of these songs. Oh, real quick before we get into the intensity of it all. Let me look at my notes really fast. No encore. Are you a David Garza fan?
I wouldn't call myself a fan, no. But I've seen him numerous times over the years.
Do you hear the David? Like, there's a Davidness in the song.
No, like, I didn't notice
that at all. A Davidness of, like, this Euphoria era that I thought was really awesome. Like, he's cool. One of my favorite artists.
Yeah.
A lot of these songs, you're dealing... one more thing. Good times. These notes. I heard H&H Music in that song, I think.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
In the Fern Cave song, you tripped at Astroworld. So you're a Houston guy.
Yep.
Yeah, full on. What part of town?
Katy.
Nice. Did you grow up playing like the Fitzgeralds and...
Are
you younger than that?
No, Fitzgeralds was around.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. But it was... but I never played there.
Okay.
I had one band in high school, and I mean, we played probably 3 gigs total, and one of them was the high school talent show, and we sucked.
Really quickly, what happened at the high... What did you play at the high school talent show?
We played one song that I had written. Well, and actually, I mentioned in the song, we played Driver 8.
Oh, yeah.
We played R.O.C.K. in the USA, yeah. I think, by... you know, John Cougar. Seems like there was one other that we played, but I can't remember what it was.
In the train conductor's head.
Yeah.
Were you a big REM guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a very big, obsessive fan.
When did they get you?
I had an older brother. He introduced me to a lot of that stuff. Probably, yeah. I was probably in middle school, probably like, around the time Document came out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is that Document has like Fall on Me and stuff like that?
No, that one's the one before it. That's
Life Search Pageant. Yeah. Great album, man.
Yeah.
Great band. So you are a Houston guy and you grew up there and you did the Astroworld stuff. Do you get down there and play at all or no? No?
Not in a while. I did with the Pawns.
Yeah.
I think we played Fitzgerald's.
What's going on with the Pawns right now?
I think it's over.
COVID killed the band?
Yep.
Fuck, man.
Yeah. Well,
what a great band.
Tommy, I think even before COVID, he had kind of fallen in love with playing drums.
Oh.
And that just has become his thing. So he's playing drums in a couple of different bands, I think, and he just doesn't have any desire to, you know... be the front guy anymore. And
reverse Dave Grohl syndrome.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's interesting. Well, I always thought that musically you guys were doing cool stuff, and I was a fan of Ruby's. Man, can I see that stuff in person? The artwork is beautiful, man.
Yeah, she did.
Such a great job.
Yeah, she did a fantastic job.
Yeah. Does she do that a lot? Or?
No, I mean, she's definitely very artistic.
Yeah.
I'm not aware that she's ever, I think she's, I mean, she's definitely been involved in the Pawns artwork before, but something like this where she created art for an album cover, I don't know that, we'd have to ask her. I'm not sure if she's ever done that before.
She's super cool.
But she, I mean, I gave her some photos. You know, this is a photo of me and Brandon, the guy that No Encore is about.
Okay.
From college, and then my niece Kaya is up there. So I gave her some different photos, and then she went around and took other photographs that, like, of orchids and ferns,
love that.
Things that fit the songs. And then she.
This is your niece?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. She I cut.
It was.
Then she went through and cut all this stuff out, like, you know, by hand, and pasted it all together.
How old was your niece when she passed away?
She was 18.
Oh, fuck, man.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing to get through. And that song, I have the title written down, the orchid.
Sweet Orchid
Moon. Sweet Orchid Moon. Yeah. What a beautiful song, man. Jesus,
wow,
what a great tribute to somebody's life, somebody that you cared about. You lost another guy. You were saying no depression, your friend Brandon.
Right, yeah. No encore?
Yeah, no encore, sorry. Yeah. No depression. It's because of the depression in the magazine.
Right, yeah, yeah.
What's wrong with me? Hey,
yeah.
Rosie. she's getting a little romantic there. Yeah. She can be your emotional support dog while we talk through this heavy stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. So he passed away, and that's kind of what started your, sent you into a depression. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think I was probably already there, but that, it, that made things a lot worse.
Okay.
For sure.
What was it you think that was like, how did you know you were already there?
Well, I didn't at the time. I think it's more now just working in therapy and kind of looking back at that, just my life and kind of, you know, my relationship with alcohol definitely. And, you know, I've learned a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That COVID, I was reading that thing that COVID didn't help that whole thing.
No.
The whole drinking and
no, that was
self-medicate, especially his first couple of months were like, cause everyone kind of like, well, this is going to happen for a month. Like, fuck, man, I could smoke weed and watch Tiger King in one day and all that. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually working from home at the same time.
Even.
Like a full-time job.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but yeah, yeah. The first 3 months of the pandemic was just pretty brutal for sure. Yeah. I was drinking way too much and just... There were days where I had to take like 4 naps just to make it through the... through the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I was not functioning very well.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you kicked it. Was that like, what was the wall you hit that?
I mean, there were just,
you don't mind sharing.
Yeah. I mean, it got to the point where there were just a lot of nights where I just found myself just continuing to drink and drink, and then until, you know, like I'd find myself out on the back deck at like 2 o'clock in the morning, just sobbing and just extremely unhappy, just miserable. And just so it was obvious to me at that point that, you know, I've got two possible paths forward. One of them leads to life and one leads to death.
Yeah.
And so I gotta, you know. So after that, it honestly, I mean, I started like seriously considering like, do I need to go to rehab? What do I need to do, you know, to fix this? And reached out and, you know, talked to some people. You know, their advice, because I think when I was, there was this one, there's a place in town, it's called, it's like a rock and roll recovery thing. I can't remember what it's called.
Sims?
It's a rehab thing.
Oh, it's a place.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I think I was already like 6 days sober when I was talking to them, and they were explaining, okay, so you're not physically, you know, addicted, because I didn't have any withdrawal symptoms really. So after talking to them, I thought, well, I'll wait another couple of weeks and see how it goes. But honestly, once I got past 2 weeks, it's been pretty fucking easy. Like, it's my life is so much better. That was very obvious. And for like probably the last maybe 3 or 4 years that I had been drinking, I really just honestly didn't even like the way it made me feel. Like, I didn't even like getting a buzz, you know? I mean, I would sit there at night and most of my drinking was alone too. I was doing all my drinking by myself, and you know, it was more just self-medicating. It wasn't something I was doing because it was fun, like it used to be, you know, I was hanging out with friends and doing that. So, it just got to the point where I just didn't like it anymore.
Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah.
That's really good. And the cool thing is, like, if you're able to take that step without being physically addicted and all that stuff, and then you don't have like the actual quote unquote alcoholism thing.
Yeah, I think it helped because I was a beer and wine guy.
Yeah.
And not, I think people who drink hard liquor probably have a much more difficult time. But, you know, because
say that to the couple bottles of Tito's in my freezer. Yeah.
Well, as long as you're not Nick Cage in it, you know, then you're okay. But yeah, it's I had real no real physical addiction, so it was definitely just more mental and habit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because that's where my thing is like I don't drink those. Every once in a while, I'll have a drink or something. Those are there, like when I come home after drinking, and I'm like, dude, I don't have to party doesn't have to end. I'm sitting here playing Happy Together and shit on the piano, like 2 a.m. But all right. So at that time, also, you're married with the family. Then you are no longer together. Or?
Correct. Okay. Currently,
sorry about that.
Currently, still separated.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a tough man. You were faced with a lot of shit.
Yeah.
What that song, the marriage song?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it's about. A lot of shit all at once for sure.
Yeah. Then you're like sober and just dealing with it through writing and working through it musically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
How did that look? Like, what was that like?
I guess what part of it?
Like writing, like what did you like? You know, I know that in my own experience, when I was married, and then towards in the situation where things got bad, and we were working on, I remember I have like 3 songs, great songs that I wrote right upon returning from therapy, like right in the door, just like, I got it. Here we go.
That song, I wrote probably about a year before we were really in the kind of heart, I guess, of the, you know, marriage counseling and all that. Right. So
stage 5.
Yeah. I think I wrote that more when things started to become more apparent to me, when I started to kind of see that things are not going well, and it was more out of a place of fear, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're going to therapy now?
Correct.
On a regular, you're doing once a week?
Yep.
Yeah. How long have you been going?
A little over 2 years, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the deep shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Well, you know, I think the thing that a lot of people that don't do it don't understand is that it isn't fun at all. But your life becomes a little more fun. Once you're able to sort of like, once you get the tools to negotiate a day-to-day existence in this fucked up place, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's
no fun at all.
It's also it's much slower than I would.
Oh, hope, yeah, dude. You know,
like
yeah.
I want to just go in and for her to just kind of wave a magic wand or just give me a list
a
of
pill.
Step by step. Like these are the things you need to do. Do this.
Drink this magic potion. You won't be weird anymore.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it doesn't work that way.
It's, no, it does. It does.
It's just really excruciatingly slow.
If it makes you feel any better, last month I entered my 22nd year.
Wow.
I'm not every week anymore. I mean, I'll go in for like a month, 6 weeks every week. A little maintenance.
Yeah.
Tighten screws. Cause they do still come loose, you know?
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm proud of you. That's a tough thing to do. You know, that's a tough thing to sort of like realize that you're the common denominator of all the terrible ways that you feel. A lot of people sit around and blame everybody else, you know, and don't ever think that they can dive in and start working on shit.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's hard as fuck. Like, you know, they should give you like a super discount for the at least the first couple of months, just because like it, like, nothing really gets done except you're like you walk out and you're like, what the fuck was the fucking, you know what I mean? Don't you? You
oh,
know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden one day you go in and there's something happens, and you walk a little differently when you walk out of there, and you're like, oh. Shit, this takes a long time. It's just really fucking expensive.
Yes, it is extremely expensive.
Yeah.
It, which is super sad because.
It is super sad,
isn't
it?
There are a lot of people out there who there's no fucking way they could afford to pay for therapy.
That's exactly right.
It just seems like everyone should have access to that.
It's how the Sims Foundation got founded, was because people were like,
exactly.
We can't lose another guy
like
this, you know?
Yep.
All right, so, well, dude, you went through some, you know, I mean, I applaud you, and I, you know, as a fan of music and good music, I'm always sorry someone has to go through that shit, but I'm like, fuck, thanks for the great album. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You lost some blood in that one, but thanks.
Yeah, yeah, it's, I mean, all the songs were written for the most part before the pandemic started, but I think it just became kind of a something I think I had to do to just get my mind off of the other shit. You know, it's like I had a project, you know, that I could work
exactly
on,
right.
And every time that I was not, you know, doing, you know, taking care of other responsibilities, either day job or as a dad or whatever.
Right.
Any free time I had, I could just dedicate to that, and I could just work on this project, and then that just kind of helped take my mind off of other things, I guess.
Yeah. So. What's your day job?
I work in state government.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What aspect of it?
In policy.
Oh, cool.
Work for the Texas Workforce Commission.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that you're helping stuff move.
Yeah.
Like real stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Certainly. It's, and it's, and the, I mean, the agency has a great mission for sure. You know, helping people get jobs.
Yeah.
So, which is desperately needed.
All right. Well, let's go back. So when did you move to Austin?
Late 1999.
Okay.
I'd been in the area several other times in the 90s. I lived in San Marcos for a few years at one point in the mid 90s. And I left the Houston area in 92.
Okay.
When I graduated high school.
Okay. And so when you moved here was when you started Tammany Hall Machine?
Yeah, probably about 2 or 3 years after.
And you guys played here. The Parish a lot. Didn't you?
Probably not a lot, but I know we played there at least a couple times.
Where would I have seen you?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, we played everywhere.
Yeah.
We played all over. We played La Zona Rosa. We played Antones, Saxon Pub. We played Continental Club a lot.
Yeah.
We played all over the place. I mean, we opened for a lot of different people. Bob Schneider. We played a lot. We played quite a few gigs with What Made Milwaukee Famous.
Maybe that's where I saw you.
Yeah, maybe. Michael Kincaid and I went to high school together.
Oh, you did?
So I'm a couple of years older than him, but we were in choir together in high school. So we've known each other a long time. So so we always liked playing gigs with them. Yeah. And that's
they were a great band.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Yeah. So you guys made records?
We did, two.
Where'd you do them and who'd you do them with? What was
the first one was all at home.
Yeah.
And we had no fucking clue what we were doing. And in fact, we did it all on this Yamaha, like 16 track digital recorder, had no editing capabilities at all. And we didn't know what we were doing. And we took it to Jim Wilson to master it. And then he said, bring that recorder back in, you know, to bring it in.
So he mixed it for you.
He basically just remixed everything because it was like, we didn't have any clue what we were doing. And so he kind of, he fixed the mixes a little bit, but,
I was in a band with that dude, man.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, which band?
God Drives a Galaxy.
Oh, okay.
He's a bass player of that band.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Then the second album we recorded, do you remember Scott Oliphant? He's a drummer for Haley.
Maybe if I saw him, I'd know him.
Yeah, he lives up in Oregon now and has a studio up there. But we recorded some of it at his house, and then the rest of it at do you know Chico Jones? He had Ohm recording facility.
I do.
Yeah, we recorded a lot of it there.
Yeah. So then, what happened with that band? What you guys? You just got tired.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, kind of thing that happened with a lot of bands. You know, we went on the road and, you know, probably spent too much time in a van with each other. And
how much were you guys playing and how far were you going?
We only did one kind of far tour where we went up, you know, to Chicago and back essentially, and, you know, places on the way and on the way back. But we did regional things where we'd go up to Tulsa and, you know, Denton and that kind of thing, or
yeah,
Baton Rouge and, you know, those places.
Play the Bayou in Baton Rouge.
What was the?
I love that place.
I don't remember. I don't remember the venue we played there. It might have been that. Yeah, but it was great. I think really probably the biggest thing for me at the time was that just as a songwriter, I think I got tired of feeling like I had to rock all the time, you know, right. Right.
Because you're playing clubs.
Right.
And you lose the crowd as soon as you stop rocking.
Absolutely.
You give them a chance to hear each other talk.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was writing a lot of, in fact, there's still tons of songs that I wrote back in that period that I've never done anything with, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I write a lot of piano ballads sometimes, you know, and just kind of quieter things that I like. And, yeah, it's hard to find a venue for that.
It is. Yeah. That's a tough, it's weird. That's you kind of play to the room you're playing, you know,
mm-hmm.
You kind of write and then eventually like you start writing to the room you're playing. You know, like if you're playing some 4-hour gigs all the time, then all of a sudden you write these songs that have like an 8-minute guitar solo.
Yeah, yeah.
It is like, you know.
Yeah, and I don't like that.
No.
I want to be able to
No, you
just
can
write
tell you're like
I
a pop
write,
songwriter.
You know?
Like you're a guy that writes songs.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Not just rock or piano ballads or anything. You write songs.
Yeah,
whatever's definitely coming out is how you're going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't force it. I'm not good at trying to write any certain way. I'm not that good. Some people can do that pretty well. But
so how did you end up with the Pawns?
We met back then, probably around 2006,
mm-hmm.
At a Continental Club show that we were on the same bill.
Okay.
And they were called La La Land back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And Luis was in the band, right? Is this before Luis?
Not that night. I think that was...
What did Luis play?
He played after that. He played a Wurlitzer and he played... I think he played some guitar too.
Okay.
But I don't know if... I can't remember the timing on all of it. He may have played with them some and then... left and then came back.
I feel like I got to know them through that Luis and Spencer Gibb kind of world.
Okay. Yeah. So we met back then and kind of became friends, and then they started inviting me to play some random gigs with them. I think there was like a Neil Young Hoot Night that they were playing. There were a few things where they just wanted someone to play keys.
Uh-huh.
And so I played those with them and then ended up playing on the first album that they recorded as the Pawns. And then after, I had a band for one album after Tammany Hall Machine called the Deaf Ears. But after that ended, then they just got me super drunk one night and invited me into the band. And I said yes.
Hmm.
That was kind of the joke always, was that I didn't ever actually remember joining.
But they have cool songs, man. I mean, I always thought that the songs were cool, and
oh yeah,
they were cool, yeah. And you know,
yeah,
there's something extremely rock star about Ruby too.
Oh, there? She's awesome.
Like, there's just something she's got a subdued kind of, she's quiet, but there's like a burning rock star within something.
Yeah. No, she's awesome. they're all so rock good. Star. And so I really miss playing with them for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So dude, are you going to play shows?
I don't know.
I
haven't figured that out yet.
Start calling people.
Yeah, eventually, yes. I miss doing that. I want to, for sure.
Right. You can get those guys. I mean, except Tommy and have two drummers, Tommy and Steve. And then Rudy.
Yeah. I definitely want to do something like that at some point.
It's tough at our age to get a band going.
It is.
You know what I do? It sucks. I go fucking hire a bunch of people.
Yeah.
It's cool, but it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Some of them are my bros. Some of them not so much.
Yeah.
But it's weird.
I've considered going out and just playing some shows solo by myself, but the playing part of it would be fun, but the rest of it feels like it would be boring. Like, mm-hmm. I want to hang out with my gang, you know, I want to hang out with my friends. That's the whole point.
And, well, that's the thing is, I think that we came up in an era and it's not so much like that anymore. There isn't like the idea. I don't think people start bands now as kids thinking in the U2 mindset. Like, dude, we're going to be like 65 years old and we're going to be fucking together doing this shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got it. You know what I mean? Might have to take a break, but that's how I came up. I didn't think I wanted to be a lonely rock star. I wanted to be one of the Beatles.
Oh, like, absolutely.
Live in one house like they do in Help.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, yeah, seriously, like, no, I definitely saw that as a little kid and I was like, fuck, that's what they do? Shit, I'm in. You know? Just a bunch of dudes being weird all day together, making each other laugh, chicks chasing them everywhere. You go play a show?
Yeah.
Fuck, that's amazing. But yeah, it's hard when you get to our age because people have kids, people have a life, people have a wife. Like, and sure, I'll go rehearse with you. I got a job, but come home and deal with traffic, getting out that space. I can't get out there and start rehearsing at 9. You know what I mean? Like, it turns into that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's more difficult logistically.
It is.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think I'm also, I'm putting out this record with my name on the cover too, so it's I guess if I'm gonna play shows to promote that under my name, then I probably am kind of in the realm of what you're talking about
solo
just hiring some people and doing that, but long term, I'm not so crazy about that idea. I mean, I like the idea of continuing to record that way some, but I love collaborating with other musicians. And, I mean, having other people.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy writing songs, but I like it when other people can come in and make those songs better.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just a shitload of fun.
Yeah, it is.
So,
I mean, well, you hired a publicist and stuff for this record, and you did some beautiful artwork. That really, that's one of the things that I miss, like that and credits, like album credits, like. It's all gone. Like, you look at Spotify, like, I mean, you look at an album cover on Spotify, it's not even an inch like it was on iTunes, like on your, like, it's like this.
Yeah.
Like, this beautiful thing is so tiny on there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's,
and I like, though, that you did it for the aesthetic value of it so that you knew that your album was beautiful.
There's a booklet in here with all the credits.
The credits,
too.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank God.
So, yeah, and I really wanted to press it on vinyl, and that was the original plan. And in fact, I have test pressings of it, but everything just got delayed and delayed so many times.
Yeah.
That I finally gave up because I felt like I just this is kind of like a chapter in my life that I just, I need to close the door on. Yes. I need to get it out and just kind of then, you know, whatever happens, happens. And then I just kind of move on to whatever's going to be next.
I appreciate that as well. Like, cause when you dive into something like this, artistically, personally, emotionally, you got to get the fuck out of there, man.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like method acting. Like, you can't stay in that fucking murderer's character too long or you eventually will freak out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I totally understand that. So what do you feel like, what, I feel like your next record is going to be like an electronic dance record, just like the happiest fucking record anyone's ever heard.
I don't know. Since recording this, I've definitely written, some more, you know, songs that are definitely emotional.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's going to be next as far as that goes. But all of these songs were written on guitar.
Uh-huh.
I've got a few that I've written on guitar, but most of the stuff I've been writing over the past, you know, year has been on piano. They tend to come out a little differently, I guess.
Yeah. So I can't play piano fast, so like everything I write on piano. I mean, I can't like convincingly rock on a piano by myself when I'm writing a song. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it comes out like either like some kind of tango thing or, So you haven't? You didn't even book like a record release show. Are you going on the radio or anything? Are you? I'm not trying to add more pressure.
No. It's okay. I mean, Joe Ray is trying to get some of that stuff put together. Right. I didn't book a show, and part of that was because of COVID too. I mean, I talked to Steve and Jeff, the other two, Steve Sanders and Jeff Dupree, were the other two musicians on the record, and I talked to them about potentially, you know, putting a set together and playing a show, a release show.
Yeah.
But with everything that was going on at the time, I think we were probably talking about that in the middle of the Omicron stuff. And it just seemed like a lot of work to go through.
Yeah.
If something's going to get fucking canceled at the last second, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I'm in that band Skyrocket. Yeah. With this cover band that plays all this private stuff. We were able to make it through with like deposits from shows they'd either canceled or postponed. And we just went ahead and cashed out the deposits and we were able to get a PPP loan and all this stuff like throughout 2020 and throughout 2021, I was able to make it every month. I mean, it got scary, but I made it through. I was eating, paying my bills and doing everything. And like, it wasn't until Omicron when all of a sudden our contracts had these, well, if you, because eventually, you know, COVID started working its way into contracts for shows.
Wow.
It just did.
Yeah.
Because you can't, these guys can't risk losing everything or losing a deposit. So then they have a time limit. So like at the beginning of middle of January, February and March just like disappeared because of Omicron. And there was no, you know, oh, we might get you back, but we didn't lose our deposit. There was just like a huge, like, so it wasn't until Omicron where I actually was like, no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was weird. It's weird because there's another one coming now.
Oh,
Omicron
really?
True Electric Boogaloo. I don't know what the name of it is, but it's apparently an Omicron variant or something. Mm. Omicron, whatever it's called. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you get it?
I've gotten it twice.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow. Which ones?
Probably Delta and Omicron.
Okay, but I got Delta.
I was fully vaccinated, and
yeah,
so it was pretty mild both times. But
you getting out to see any shows? Did you?
Yeah, finally.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
COVID, and it did this to not just me; it did this to everybody. But it just took away so much about what we all enjoy so much about life, you know? And,
yeah.
Not being able to go out to shows for, you know, a year and a half.
Did they close the trail for 3 months? I live on the fucking, like, that was the one. I was like, well, cool. I'll just walk around Austin all day. Trail closed. You're like, fuck, dude, seriously? Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Give me something.
Yeah. So, finally been able to go see some things. So I saw Nick Cave and Warren Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
In March.
Yeah.
At Moody, and that was really amazing. I have season tickets to the Austin Symphony, so I've been doing that every month.
Oh, awesome.
Since September.
How's that going over there?
It's good.
Doing all right?
Yeah.
Though?
They've required vaccination or negative test and masks and all that for most of the season until just this past last Friday I went, and pretty COVID precautions are pretty much out the door at this point. Everybody's just back to normal. Yeah. I've seen some pretty amazing performances there for sure.
Awesome. Do you know Kelly Waddle, P. Kellek Waddle?
I don't.
Double bass guy on there. There's some of the Toscog ladies are in there too, like Sarah Nelson.
Oh, really?
And yeah. So I sometimes I go. They'll put me on the list.
Yeah.
Or like I'll go. They're like, hey, when was the last time you came? So I'll go. When I go, I get fucking depressed though, because it's like, it's never remotely full.
Oh yeah.
Everyone's 950. I'm like a kid in that. I'm like a child in that place.
Yeah.
And halfway through the thing, I'm not joking, like 60% of the people are fucking asleep. Like legitimately head back, mouth open, asleep. 90-year-old sleeping people.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but there were, last Friday, there were a lot of seats empty. And
yeah,
there's a couple that has the season tickets right next to me that I sit next to every month at the performances.
Yeah, I've been going.
And yeah, they're probably in their 80s, probably. Very nice, but yeah, there's not a whole lot of young people there.
It's got to be a way to sort of like translate. Do you know Graham Reynolds?
Uh-huh, yeah.
His episode comes out on Friday, but just talking to him about, I mean, that's what he does. He's a composer guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A new modern, and there's tons of guys like that. There's got to be some way that they don't just play the same 15 symphonies over and over again that they've played for the last, 150 years.
Yeah, they definitely play a lot of stuff. It's more than that, but they are.
No, but you know what I mean.
But yeah, they're sticking to kind of the classical repertoire.
Yeah.
Some
way it's got to stay alive. Like, it's so funny because ever since sort of like the last, 10 years of the decline of rock and the death of rock and the slow death of rock.
Yeah.
And people are bitching and freaking out. And I'm like, man, you been to the symphony? No, man. Like, yeah, exactly. That's what's happening to us, dude. It's going to be 80-year-olds, all of them half fucking asleep that used to like AC/DC, you know what I mean? Back in the 80s or something. Yeah, I get worried about that stuff.
Yeah.
And I still laugh about it because I think it is kind of funny. Because it's so, like, we grew up in an era where it was like rock and roll was like their songs, rock and roll's here to stay, it will never die. You know, shit like that, but like, what a weird thought. I never thought like the end of like rock and roll would like someone would look at you funny because you're doing a show and you're like, oh, I just brought my acoustic guitar. And they're like, oh, you didn't bring your tracks? Like, no, dude, it's fucking play. Just you? What are you, 80?
Yeah, it's like it seems like there's not that many rock bands anymore.
No.
It's just two people.
Yeah,
they're doing drum machines and that kind of stuff.
It's just two people.
Yeah.
In a box with colored buttons.
Some of that stuff is awesome.
It is awesome.
But it's definitely not what I do.
Well, then you realize that at some point, some guy was sitting around with an acoustic guitar. Four dudes showed up with electric guitars, electric bass, and drums. And that guy's like, that's not music. But that's what we think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm really scared to be that guy. Like, I really am. Like, yeah. I do get scared. I don't want to dinosaur myself.
Yeah.
But it is hard to get into new music when it's all so on the grid and everything's so specifically tuned that you do lose that sort of magic of, people not totally locked in with the click.
It's just more human when it's...
Human.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, your record is, if it's anything, man, it is fucking human.
Yeah, I bet.
Exceedingly human. Yeah. 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 Do you get scared? I mean, because I've put out records before that reveal a lot about what's happening with me and where I'm at or where I was a few months ago or where I was a year ago or something like that. And there is that moment, like when it comes out, I'm like, oh shit. Everyone's gonna know.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm scared. I mean, I think the people who know me have, you know, they're aware that I've gone through some things, so I'm not too worried about, you know, what other people who don't know me might think. I guess maybe people I work with.
It's not even, you know, so much that know you might think, it's that they know this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
There's a weird, you know, like when I was a teenager, my mom was murdered, and it was like an unsolved case for a really long time. And then in like 2011, sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but in 2011, there was a trial. They found the dude after like 27 years, super fucking heavy, amazing also. These cops did amazing work and like solved this case that was unsolvable. And then it was on 48 hours.
No shit.
Then I was like randomly at Target one day, just looking through shirts. This lady sees me and goes, just starts bawling. And I'm like, fuck, you all right? What's wrong? What you need? What can I do? She's like, are you the guy? And I was like, oh my God. And then it dawned on me. I was like, oh shit. Then I'd be playing Skyrocket gigs and I'd see people being like pointing at me and like, oh no, and telling somebody else the whole story. And I'm like, oh, everybody knows my shit. It's a little weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's even, you know, it's the same thing as having like, you know, your dog died. Like, you know, I have a guy, DZ Brown, here in town. He won't come on my show because his manager manages another guy. And the day that I put his show out was the day after my dog of 14 years died, Taylor. And I was sobbing through the whole intro. And that manager thought that was so offensive that he won't let his other artists on the show. But you know what I mean? Like, you realize, you're like, oh, my, you know, I share my stuff and it's, you know.
Yeah, man, maybe I shouldn't be putting that out. now you got me scared.
Oh, man.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's an empowering feeling, though, because there you are, you're expressing it, and ultimately what ends up happening is people relate to it, and they connect with your music on a deeper level because they understand they've been through that shit themselves.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, of course, your situation is very unique,
right,
and this...
Shit is shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the worst thing you've gone through is the worst thing you've gone through. No matter what the thing actually was, it's still... You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. But I don't know. This stuff is... There's nothing super unique about any of this. I mean, a lot of people...
Right, so it'll connect with a lot of people.
Apart. A lot of people have had, you know, lost friends and family members. So it's...
Yeah.
I think people have been there.
Yeah.
In that same place.
You think you'll be writing some songs, just make up scenarios this time a little more? Do you do that much?
No, not really. Typically, in the past, this is definitely the most personal record I've ever done. You know, I've definitely, in the past, in Tammany Hall Machine, there were songs that were somewhat personal. And but... For the most part, I think a lot of times I was just throwing words together.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to come up with things that just sounded interesting.
Yeah.
Without a lot of concern for, you know, any kind of unifying meaning.
Right. Yeah. All right, so people can find you at joelmullins.com. Midlife Crisis is the album. It's available on April 22nd. I think this will come out. I think it'll come out before then. People can also get the double side A single, the 7-inch, featuring Desperation Times and Midlife Crisis.
Yep.
Do you feel like it was a midlife crisis?
I feel like it still is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you old enough to remember this movie called Middle Age Crazy from like 1979? It's filmed in Houston.
Really?
Fucking filmed in Houston, dude.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, with what's his name, the crazy guy. I'll figure it out. I saw that when I was like 10, and I wanted to have a midlife crisis because the dude like just started banging like a secretary and got like a Porsche and all this stuff. I was like, that's my dude. I can't wait till I have a midlife crisis. But the real ones are really crisis-y.
Yeah.
Well, dude, people need to get out there and check out this record. It'll be available wherever. Do you do a Bandcamp thing? Are you a
Yeah, I've set one up. So yeah, it'll be up there. Okay. It'll be on, of course, it'll be on Amazon.
The places.
You can buy the actual CD on Amazon and Waterloo and Avenir and that stuff.
Excellent.
But for most people probably don't have anything to play a CD on so they can stream it, you know. But
yeah. I have that one. But I have to listen to everything on NS10, so it sounds like I did a bunch of cocaine in the 80s. When I listen to stuff on those speakers. You know what's so funny? Those new powered speakers that have that soft, normal bass sound, I don't like it. I have to listen to these like ones that exhaust your ears after an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Dude, you did such an amazing job on your record. Such an amazing job, really. And I know you went out on a limb personally, and you really were able to do that thing that like ultimately Bowie did, which is like just document, you know. He did it with his death, which is pretty unbelievable. But the fact that you took your life and worked your problems out in the most beautiful way you can, like creating art, just, you know, congratulations. You did an amazing job.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. It's, I'm extremely proud of the work that we did on it. And I definitely couldn't have done it alone, for sure. If I'd have done it by myself, it would be a very different record and probably... I mean, the emotion and all that would still be there, but I don't think it would be as fun to listen to.
No.
So it's, you know, without Steve and Jeff, and everything that they brought to it, because, there were arrangement things. I mean, some of these songs went through massive changes from the time I started until till the time it was completed, just based on the kind of back and forth between them and me. So that whole process was a lot of fun, and it was, In result, I think worked out pretty well. So.
Yeah, it did. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I hope you have a great... let me know when you play. I want to come see it. I'd like to see this live.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, thanks for doing the show. You feel good about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
The show or the album?
The show.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Hiding a dark truth.
Words can't control. That was Joel Mullins. His album Midlife Crisis is available now wherever it is you stream and download your music. Go to joelmullins.com for all of your Joel Mullins needs. I want to thank him for coming on the show and being so honest. I know that these are very difficult things to talk about, but it's something that I think everybody, especially during the quarantine, so much stuff came out about depression. So many people got in touch with their depression during that time. And I just want to thank Joel for being out there and being open about it, because I think that only helps other people through the things. And I'm sorry for all of his loss, but at least he turned it into something very positive. Okay. And I hope that gives us all something to strive for. Midlife Crisis, his album, available now wherever you stream and download your music. Go to joelmullins.com for all of your Joel Mullins needs. And hey, gang, don't forget, when you're out there, listening to Joel Mullins and following Joel Mullins, don't forget that you can follow our podcast. You'll get two new shows a week. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Okay? Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere you find podcasts, new shows every Tuesday and every Friday. All right. All right. Have a great, great, great week. Whatever it is you do during the week, don't hurt yourself. Let's get down.